K. Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. The FBI is expected to speak soon after releasing more photos of the person of interest in the shooting death of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. CBS's Anna Schechter also reports.
Federal law enforcement believes they have the identification potentially of that suspect, but I will caution everybody, they still say they do not have a suspect in custody.
Two students shot by a 16-year-old student at Evergreen High School near Denver yesterday are still in the hospital. Jefferson County Sheriff's spokesperson Jackie Kelly says the suspect died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Based on some of the information that we're seeing about this suspect, he was radicalized by some extremist network.
We paid for more for our gas, groceries, and airfares last month as prices jumped 2.9% from a year ago. CBS's Kelly O'Grady.
Next week, I think the Fed is going to look at this and say, yes, we know prices are rising a little bit. It's not crazy. Let's focus on the labor market. Let's deliver that interest rate cut and then see what comes in the months ahead.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Packers in prime time. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from Lambeau Field in Green Bay, where the Packers play the Washington Commanders tonight. Green Bay 3-point favorites to win. Jordan Love asks if he likes playing in night games.
I like playing in whatever game. You know, no matter what game it is, I'm ready. Obviously, we don't get to pick and choose which games are prime time, things like that. But, man, every game is an opportunity to go out there and win the game. So it doesn't matter when it is, what time, where we're playing at. You know, I'm ready for each game.
Baseball, the Brewers headed home. They open a series tomorrow night in Milwaukee against the St. Louis Cardinals after being swept by the Rangers. Final score yesterday, 6-3. Pat Murphy.
Still proud of our guys. I love our guys. It's not lack of effort, guys. It's not letting down. It's maybe the opposite. We're exhausted. We're beat up. We're injured. And things did not go our way this week. You guys saw it. You know, that has to happen sometimes in baseball.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. It is 9/11. And the reality, we all remember where we were. We all remember what we were doing. We all remember the horrible tragedy of that day. And I could spend hours talking about how horrible it has been and it was. But I'm going to start with the fact that I believe that that was the day that began really the shredding of this country. The billionaire class had been doing a pretty good job dividing and conquering the working class, but it was 9/11 that really allowed government to really ramp up their divisive tactics. The Patriot Act gave government unprecedented powers. Again, a lot of conservatives who told us they believed in smaller, less intrusive government got on board. And what it's done is given those who want to tear this country apart and divide us an incredible tool. And that tool is demonizing. You name the group. This side, that side, whatever. They've done a masterful job of using the divisions that were really amplified after 9/11. They've done a great job of training us to think of the others. We don't think of each other as human almost anymore. So when Charlie Kirk was murdered yesterday, I said, look, I was not a Charlie Kirk fan. found his rhetoric distasteful. I disagreed with him on policy after policy. Thought that, you know, like a lot of people, he was a chaos merchant looking to just get attention. And I, for the most part, ignored him, like I do with most chaos merchants, most extremists who just are looking to divide, are looking to get attention, and looking to ultimately profit. I said, look, you know, I didn't pay much attention to him, but I never wanted him dead. And cowards with guns do horrible things. Then you add into this horrible recipe of cowards and guns, this portion of desperation. And it's on all sides. It's on the right, it's on the left, it's everywhere. The other side, well, they're coming after me. And the reality is, you know, from where I sit, the rhetoric that I've gotten from my red hat crowd is weak at best. But it's reinforced again and again and again, because what the right has done masterfully over the last several decades is build a very powerful empire of regurgitation. You repeat something often enough to as many people as possible for a long period of time, it then becomes part of the culture. And it's what they've done in issue after issue. They've demonized, you name the group. There's a stereotype, there's a right-wing message, and it's stuck. Now you go, but the left does the same thing. A little bit, yeah, but they don't have, well, the money, the megaphone, the infrastructure, or the organization. The left is fairly siloed. Each group has its individual little silo, and never shall people come together, which is why I'm a labor guy. I think all of those silos, you've got your issues, but the one thing we all can agree on is that we should have good wages, good health care benefits, retirement security, opportunities, a voice on the job, and an empowered voice in public space that can't be silenced. But the right has done a masterful job of out-organizing. And Charlie Kirk was one of those organizers. Like his tactics or don't, and I didn't, he went into places and like any evangelist for any ideology, preached his words. Now, I didn't find his words particularly compelling or interesting. I found most of it distasteful, again, for maximum chaos. But I go back to, violence is not the answer to this. It's only going to make things worse. And while we, at this moment, I do not know who the murderer is, You have to know that this will be politicized, that he will be a martyr, and that they will use this at every opportunity to go after, name a marginalized group, especially if they're in one of the, if one of these folks happens to be part of one of those groups. So as I sat and I thought about this, and I spent a good bit of time yesterday just saddened, deeply saddened by the reality that our political discourse is heading in this direction, that we can't, and it's been going this way for a while. Look, I've said before, I used to have a lot of conservative conversationalists. A lot of people get upset with my worse use of the word friend. I used to have a lot of friends, but more acquaintances, people that I used to speak to. And we used to debate, and you could have a beer with and disagree, slap each other on the back and go, we'll see you tomorrow. One of the things I always said about this country is that the greatest thing about it is you can be wrong. I can be wrong. And I don't have to kill you, or you don't have to kill me. We can disagree. But sadly, we're going to a place, and it's coming. This is will not be the last act of political violence. You look at the voices on the right and some of the responses that have come out of this, calling for civil war, saying, oh, this is war. We're going to go get those leftists, those commie leftists. Heated rhetoric for the sole purpose of riling up the base. And for me, interestingly enough, I still believe that most of the people doing the riling are the people who understand the game. And the game is, hey, look at me. Hey, give me your attention. Hey, engaged with my, you know, my social media. And I don't do a lot of social media because I'll be honest with you. I think it's a giant cesspool. I think it is the death of debate. I think it's the death of conversation. Because it allows people to be the worst versions of themselves. To say the most horrible things possible that they wouldn't say to your face. Because while I'm saying violence is not the answer, you're a lot more respectable when you're looking someone eye to eye. And while I, again, didn't agree with Charlie Kirk, I respected the fact that he was willing to go in and have a conversation. Again, didn't agree. And this is an opportunity in this moment because we're going to see a lot of evangelizing of all of the things that Charlie Kirk has said over the years. He is going to be basically canonized by the right. We will see inspirational quote after inspirational quote, like, you know, sometimes people dying is good because, you know, we've got the Second Amendment. What's scary to me is that we're going to be focused on this for a very long time. Until the next. Because here's the other weird part about this. Charlie Kirk got all the news. The school shooting that happened a short time later didn't get quite the press. Because, hey, we can only focus on one shooting a day in a country where we have multiple. And again, we're going to hear from the evangelists on the right that it's not the guns. It's not the fact that we should be doing better background checks and better registration and all of that. It's none of that. Something else. And without knowing what's coming, you know it's going to end up being weaponized against, name the marginalized group. And then the policies come along. And this is where I have a real problem with what the right does. We're in a moment right now where Donald Trump is, and his acolytes are destroying the guardrails of democracy. They're destroying our government. But not in a way that it's going to break it completely. They're going to weaponize it to where it's in their interest. Understand, corporate America going to be taken care of. The very wealthy going to be taken care of. The working class of this country is getting screwed on both sides. And this is where, you know, I reach out to my red hat friends. And I do this often. Is your life getting any better? Will this act, will this horrible cowardice act make life any better for working people? The answer is no. And for me, if there's something in this that maybe we can take from, maybe the idea of being a little more respectful, a little more tolerant. And look, understand, I'm not picking sides on this one. Intolerance is part of both extremes. For me, the problem in this day right now are the extremists on both sides. The people who were saying that it's civil war time, get the guns, do all that stuff, they are extremists. But the people on the other side who are like, well, good for him, good riddance, couldn't have happened to a nicer guy, those are extremists. I don't want anything to do with either of them. And we in this country, we had better find our way back to the middle of the road, back to the between the curbs at least, because standing on the sidewalks throwing bombs at each other isn't working. So for me, this is where this moment, this could be a moment, this could be a learning moment, a teachable moment, a moment that Charlie Kirk could have a legacy worth having. Being that moment where we say, you know what, we should be able to respectfully disagree, have differences of opinion without being demonized or canceled or assaulted. but also respect the rule of law and the founding of this country, that everyone has certain inalienable rights. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. And that my happiness, as long as it doesn't directly infringe upon your rights, shouldn't bother you. So for me, this is one of those moments where I'm hopeful. I got to tell you, yesterday was saddened, deeply saddened, deflated by where we are. Today, my hope is maybe it's a learnable moment. Maybe we have an opportunity. Now, I know some of my friends on the left are, "Oh, you're crazy. We should be." I'm not there with you. Because, you know, you live by the sword, die by the sword. And a lot of people are throwing that out about him. But, you know, you too. So I want to hear what you think. And I don't want to hear personal attacks. I don't want to hear, I certainly don't want four-letter words. But I also don't want AI either. I'm curious what the mindset is going forward. If there is a way forward, because understand, the policies this administration is peddling, bad stuff, needs to be fought back, needs to be resisted, needs to be getting people in the streets. And understand, this kind of violence is only going to make that much harder. That kind of violence is only going to give the justification that, sorry, we have to suspend your rights. Now, I had a couple of people email me, go, "Yes, see, I'll bet you Trump did this." I don't know. I'm not going there. What I know is going forward that they're going to use this as an opportunity to shut down your ability to peaceful assembly, to redress your grievances to your government, and have your voice heard. And this is where coming together and organizing, and I'm hoping that our friends all across the spectrum come back to the middle of the road. Get between the curbs. Have difficult conversations. But also do it in a respectful way. What's interesting, at least from my perspective, and those of you who have emailed me, those of you who send me ugly stuff, you know that I always respond with something positive. I always respond with, "Is this the best you got? Can you do better? Is this going to help us be better?" Because while I don't mind a good argument every once in a while, and I don't mind using some colorful language every now and again, I don't find it particularly helpful. I don't think it's going to make our lives better. And me, this show, the goal here is always about how we make working class folks' lives better, how we make better opportunities for ourselves, our children. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, evidently John Fetterman said something interesting. And I got a bunch of emails from folks on that front. So when I come back, I'm going to pick up on what Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman had to say about capitalism and socialism and ism-ism. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you may remember the other day we talked about the Gallup poll that said that 42% of Democrats have a favorable view of capitalism, while 66% of Democrats viewed socialism favorably. Now, never mind that that's 108%. I understand how it happens, but the numbers are funny. But 42% favorable of capitalism, 66% favorable of socialism. And, you know, as I was thinking about that, you know, you go 108%, I might be in that 8% over 100%, because, look, I find each somewhat favorable. And this is the weird thing, because John Fetterman, I thought, and I've known John for a number of years. We used to have him on the program all the time before he was a senator. Somehow, you know, they get to be senator and they go away. But he told a story about someone that he met, I guess, in Croatia, who told him that socialism's terrible and that how could anyone possibly want to have us live in a socialist country? And you go, yeah, in places where they lived under actual socialism, yeah, I'm with you. And he also told the story of how the person in Croatia could go, how could they be against capitalism? Well, my friend, people in this country are looking at the ills of capitalism going, it's not that great for us. It's causing some massive inequality. There are some problems. And again, this extremism is what bothers me. You've got binary choices. It's right or left. It's Democrat or Republican. It's capitalism or socialism. It's up or down. It's black or white. Any of these binary choices are, just not how life is. And I've said before, if you tell me that you're a socialist, I don't really want much to do with you because I'm not with you. But if you're an absolute capitalist, I'm not there either. There's somewhere in that middle of the road where there are good things that are socialist and there are good things that are capitalist. And why can't we, I don't know, figure out how to use the best of both? But that's not possible because the moneyed interests don't want you to think about socialism as having any good parts. Because, well, that means they're going to pay higher taxes. Of course, that they're going to get less. And when we had a better mix of capitalism and socialism, when we had policies that were somewhat taking the edges off of capitalism, the economy was much better for workers. We had much more broadly shared prosperity. That's just reality. And I had someone ask me the other day, well, you know, this is a capitalist country. There's no socialism here. And you go, oh, no. Really? There's no socialism here? We bail out all the banks. We bail out corporate America every time they get into trouble. That's socialism. That's socializing risk. We've got Social Security. It's in the name. And I don't know a lot of people who are on Social Security go, this sucks. One of the greatest anti-poverty programs ever devised. And yet, we've got people saying, you know, oh, I'm only capitalist. But again, I go back to this divide. We're given these polar opposite choices. And the belief is that we're not capable of nuance. We're not capable of fleshing out the better idea because we're not doing that anywhere in our politics. Sorry. When was the last time we actually solved a problem in D.C.? And I know this plays right into the frame of the right because they've done a really great job of ensuring that nothing gets done to help working people. They do a great job in filling the coffers of corporate America. They do a great job of deregulating, tax breaks for the rich. They do a great job of that, kicking the poor. Excellent job. Supplying cheap, exploitable labor. Yeah, they're working on that. But when was the last time they did something that actually benefited us? You know, some would say the Affordable Care Act was one of the last times that we had a major social program, a major legislative program that helped people. Because interestingly enough, when you take away the Obamacare, the words not the policy. People tend to like it. Hey, you mean I can buy insurance and it's fairly well affordable? I might be able to, you know, not go broke when I get sick. I might not have to die if I get sick and don't have insurance. Sounds like a good idea. But again, we don't talk about it in those terms because there is such a powerful media in this country. And I know the right loves to play the victim because nobody plays the victim card like a conservative. You listen to the words that come out of their mouth. And what they're spoon-fed on a daily basis, which is everyone's lazy, they just want handouts. Perfect example. And I think I talked about this not too long ago. We took my wife to breakfast. And there were a couple of us there, and the people at the counter were talking about homelessness. You know, they're talking about how lazy the homeless are and how they don't want to work. And, you know, every one of those talking points that you would hear on a right-wing talk radio show, it was all there. You could have gotten your checklist and just, yep. And then the anecdotal starts. Well, I knew a guy. And had my wife not been there, I would have chimed in because I would have loved to have had that conversation. Now, would that have ended up in an argument? I hope so. It would end up in words back and forth. What I hoped it wouldn't end up in is someone shooting me or someone else. What I come back to is we've been pitted against each other. And this is where my frustration in this is, especially with John Fetterman, because I would hope he would know better. Everything's not black and white. Everything's not up and down. We in this country, one of the greatest countries in the history of humanity, have the ability to solve real problems. We have the wealth, being the wealthiest country in the history of humanity at its wealthiest moment. We can solve problems. We choose through our politics not to. Because understand, there is a rage machine out there to keep us pitted against each other, not to make our lives better. And this is the part that's weird to me, because as I was listening to these guys go on about the homeless and how lazy they are, and I'm like, wow, have you been to a homeless shelter? Do you understand what the obstacles for homeless people are? And do you really want a homeless person who's got nowhere to go to the bathroom, working in a fast food restaurant, making your food? What it comes back to me is I don't know what it is about humanity, but we seem to love to punch down. That somehow we're better. And everybody's struggling. Everybody I know is struggling. You listen to those people at the counter talking about how hard it is, how expensive things are, how their paycheck doesn't go as long, but always pointing back to the homeless guy who's too lazy or afraid he's going to lose his wonderful disability benefits, which are below poverty. What is it about us? What is it about us that puts us in this situation where we're going to go, you know, that homeless guy's getting something I'm not, without going, hey, there's a tax bill, the big bad tax bill that is going to make the wealthiest people in this country even wealthier while kicking the poor, taking their Medicaid, taking food stamps, taking programs that help low-income working folks. Because the dirty little secret about homelessness in this country is most of the people work. They got low-wage jobs. They just don't have enough money to find a place to live. And we've done nothing, to solve our housing problems. You know, and I go back to Kamala Harris. Her big policy was we're going to give tax credits, $25,000 to buy a house. Instead of just going, we're going to build houses. lots of them. And we're going to set up an institution to lend at low interest rates to get low-income families into homes, reasonable homes. No, that's socialism. I forgot we're against socialism. Want to hear your thoughts? Where do you find yourself on the capitalism socialism spectrum? Are you like me? Yeah, there's some from each. We can pick and choose. We can take the edges off. We can make it better. Because look, I want government doing certain things. I also don't want government doing certain things. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlum.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, patchy fog by dawn, and lows within a few degrees of 60. Turning mostly sunny for tomorrow, highs warmer, upper 70s. Slight storm chance Friday night into early Saturday, staying warm through the weekend. Right now it's 58.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I'm just tired of male nudity. I don't ever need to see an old naked dude again in my life.
Yeah.
Like in the locker room, you expect to see a certain amount of nudity. Okay. Some of those guys walk around like they're, you know, proud and they're like,
yeah, they walk.
You should just not do that. You don't really want to make eye contact with anyone because yeah. You don't want to give people the wrong impression. You don't know what people are thinking.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So my point, you look at Nancy Mace's comment. Before we knew anything, before anybody knew who was doing what or who was responsible for Charlie Kirk's murder, Nancy Mace, it's Democrats. Democrats owned what happened today. And, yeah, it's what you expect. You got to get those hot takes, got to be first. And, you know, I look at the response of Michael Fanon, who said, I know what it's like to be on the business end of political violence. He said, I felt fists, flagpoles, and tasers on January 6th. I heard men scream that they were going to kill me in the name of Donald Trump. He said, that day taught me something, too. Many of us are still trying to ignore. Once political violence becomes acceptable, once you decide that your enemy isn't just wrong but expendable, you don't control where it leads. I absolutely agree. He said, if you cheered this shooting because you hated Kirk, you're no better than the mob who chanted for Mike Pence's hanging. If you shrug it off because it happened to the other side, you're part of the same sickness that's rotting this country. And look, I couldn't say it better myself. That's the reality. Now, are there very real policy differences that we should be fighting? Because look, what I've said is I think, you know, Donald Trump has opened the door to unprecedented presidential power. And when Democrats take power, that they should be doing the same thing and moving the pendulum in the other direction to actually make people's lives better. And undoing some of the horrible of the past. And as I started today off talking about, 9/11 was kind of the big moment. And if you remember the PNAC report that said that, you know, they need a Pearl Harbor-like event, the Project for a New American Century is the name of the group. They wrote a piece years before 9/11 happened that they needed that. They needed that shock, that big moment that changed the public's hearts and mind, like the Great Depression did for our grandparents and great-grandparents' generation, what Pearl Harbor did for our great-grandparents' generation, our grandparents' generation. What that did was gave Roosevelt a lot of ability to move a lot of very progressive kind of legislation. Well, the right knows history a little bit. They pay a lot of really smart people a ton of money to dream up horrible ideas. And look, they wrote it all down in Project 2025, so you know what they're getting their money for. But after 9/11, I remember all of the push to consolidate power in the hands of the federal government. And it was interesting to me watching conservatives who had told me that they believe in states' rights and limited federal power jump right on board to the Patriot Act. And I was living in Allentown, Pennsylvania at the time, and the League of Women Voters had done a panel. They had six people who came out to debate the Patriot Act. Three people who read it, three people who they got the cliff notes. They got the talking points and admitted it. Because this is what the people who read it made sure that everyone knew. The people who didn't read it were all on board. The people who actually read it and actually digested all of that horrible bill were saying, look, this is bad. It allowed unprecedented surveillance on citizens of this country. It allowed secret searches, broad access to your data without any judicial oversight, without any warrants, without you even knowing it. Expanded wiretapping and electronic surveillance because, hey, you know, we gotta get that communication from the terrorists. And they reduced the threshold at which, because we got to do this fast. We ended up getting what was popular, sneak and peek. That's what it was. Sneak and peek searches. We're just gonna go in and look. That's all. What harm could that be? Would you mind if I came in and checked your bedside drawer without you knowing it? While you're away at dinner or something? Because that's what we did. Allowed law enforcement to search homes and businesses without ever telling anyone afterwards. They just snuck in and looked through your stuff. You didn't even know it. And understand, conservatives have always talked about rights and the Constitution. Due process, not one of those things they're really interested in. And understand, due process, 14th Amendment, as I understand, not part of the Constitution that they recognize. So it's not surprising that they would be all in favor of indefinite detentions without trial. Because why should we have a writ of habeas corpus to find out, what charges are against you for both citizens and non-citizens? So they're snatching up people right now, masked marauders are going through the cities, snatching people up. We see the videos. Where are they going? What are they being charged with? Now, we're not designating them as enemy combatants anymore. Not yet, anyway. We're not sending them to Guantanamo Bay. Or are we? Don't know. So for me, there's a lot here that you go, 9/11 was really the catalyst of bad. Military tribunals for people we suspect are terrorists. We can't have actual courts of citizens. No, we need military. They're the only ones who can handle this. And interestingly enough, this is where you go, military tribunals after 9/11, replace those civilian trials, cut down on due process, especially for non-citizens. What did they just do not too long ago? Sent, 600 JAG officers to become immigration judges? Really? And that's okay. That's okay with some, because it's not them right now. But as you erode due process rights, as you erode the procedure, what happens when they come for you? The fact that most of our data is already been accessed because of Section 215 of the Patriot Act, allowing bulk data capture across phone records, any communications. It's all fair game. And now in the cloud, thanks to Big Balls, thanks to Doge and the ferrets, all of that information is somewhere. Do you feel comfortable? Do you feel safe? Because understand, this is stuff we don't talk about. Because it's other people. It's those people. They've expanded the no-fly list. They're still doing that. Extraordinary Rendition. Do these names, these sound familiar? And we targeted a certain group of people. And now we're doing the same thing because our Supreme Court said it's okay. You can go after people who look suspicious. You know, they look like they could be illegals. They look like they could speak Spanish, which, I had to think about with my wife because my wife was fluent in Spanish, lived in Spain for a semester back when she was in college. It's one of those things that she loved doing, but she speaks Spanish when she can. Does this mean now I gotta carry papers? Because they might, she speaks Spanish, gotta go. And understand the consequences of all of this, of this normalizing of things that 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, things that my grandparents would have never tolerated. It now seems like, it's Thursday. It's Thursday. What is it about us that lets us go, okay, it's not me today. Hey, it's them. And the more we allow the normalization of things like mass surveillance and the erosion of our privacy rights and discrimination, based on what you look like, profiling, you look, we've got a profile, you look like it. And then I hear people say, the left does this stuff. Do they? With what power? It's the left that's been fighting back against this stuff. And I know some of my right friends go, I was fighting back too. Well, here's the place where the right and left can come back together. Maybe we start reuniting this country around some ideas about privacy, some ideas about personal liberty, some ideas around freedom. Because I know those are buzzwords on the right. I know they use them a lot. But their policymakers seem to be doing what they can to claw some of that back and swing the power of we the people into the hands of they the corporations. Because while we're going through all this, while we're dancing around all of this stuff, what we're not doing is regulating AI. That's a decade before states can do any of that, thanks to Trump's big nightmare bill. We're not doing anything about rebuilding this country. In fact, Trump's doing everything he can do to slice and gut what investments Biden made during his term. There's no new legislation for infrastructure. There's no new direction for rebuilding this country. No. We're going to privatize. And as I've said before, the scary part of this for me is all of this, because they've normalized the end of privacy. They've normalized the end of being able to be secure in one's papers, in one's person. And understand, as we continue down this digital pathway, and I talked about John Fetterman a moment ago, one of the things I think Fetterman's doing right is he's proposed a piece of legislation to make businesses take cash. Because there are people like me who still use cash. I don't want to pay credit card companies a whole bunch of money. And I certainly don't want someone itemizing my charges. But we've now moved into almost a post-cash world. We went to a fast food restaurant not too long ago because my wife wanted something. They didn't take cash. We went to a federal park to do some rafting. They didn't take cash. Had to use a card. And I don't hear anyone. Where are my trifold hat crowd? Where's the liberty folk? Where are the freedom people? Because understand, it's going to affect them the same way it's going to affect everyone else. Because at the end of the day, it is the 99% against the 1%. Because the 1% is the ones that they're going to benefit from this wildly. And I love hearing them say, it'll give people more time to do other things, like be hungry, like be homeless, so those people at the counter that I was talking about earlier could have someone to beat up on and make themselves feel superior. This is where my frustration is. This is where I'm saying we should be doing better. We should be organizing around a lot of other issues. But sadly, the power of right-wing media in this country to set the agenda, to set the direction, it's almost unstoppable. Because immediately, what we hear from right-wing politicians after Kirk's death, it was all about the trans. It was all about all about the other. And I fear that it could be a trans person. I fear it could be, because that will give them justification to crack down in ways that most people can't imagine. And I fear for that community. And I will stand with that community in those moments where they are attacking them. Absolutely, we all should. And while I may not be entirely on board, it doesn't matter. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. I don't have to agree with what you do, but I will fight for your right to do it. We used to think that way in this country. We used to think that, you know, whatever you do in the confines of your four walls, that's your business. What you do with your life, your business. I don't have to like it. I don't have to sign on. I don't have to promote it. I don't have to accept it. But I'm not going to be able to go and bash you and fire you and throw you out of your home. You have the right to do what you want to do. But I fear this is going to be the moment where they weaponize like on an issue like never before. Want to hear your thoughts? Send me the hate mail, because I enjoy that. But I want to hear your thoughts. Are you as concerned as I am about a future where our rights are diminished, our opportunities are diminished, but at least we're all, we're all straight white? I'm worried about our future. Want to hear your thoughts? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1851. That was the day that a Maryland planter named Edward Gorsuch was killed in Christiana, Pennsylvania. Gorsuch had come to Pennsylvania to try and recapture three black men that had escaped from slavery on his farm outside of Baltimore 2 years earlier. A year after the men escaped, Congress passed the Fugitive Slave Act. This penalized helping those who had escaped slavery with a $1,000 fine and up to 6 months in jail. Emboldened by the law, slave catchers chased those who had made the journey to freedom in the North. Gorsuch received news that the men he was looking for were in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. Two of the escaped slaves were at the farm of William Parker, a black man who had also escaped slavery in Maryland. Located just north of the Mason-Dixon line, Lancaster had a well-established Underground Railroad network. An armed black self-defense group had developed to stand against the slave catchers. Gorsuch and his son gathered a group of men and headed north. At the Parker farm, they were confronted by a group of at least 50 black men armed with guns and pitchforks. Gorsuch refused to leave, and a gun battle erupted. Gorsuch was shot and killed in the exchange of fire. Parker, his family, and the three formerly enslaved men fled to Canada. 38 others who were there that day were charged with treason for taking part in the confrontation. This included Castor Hanway, a white man who had tried to defuse the standoff. None of the charged were ever convicted. In the South, slave owners were outraged that no one was punished. Tensions between the North and South sharpened. As a result, the country moved closer to the Civil War, the bloody conflict that finally ended slave labor. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it's been a while since I have talked about my personal situation, and we're going to be taking off on September 12th for a personal day. You know, this is a mental health day. It's the day 1 year ago that my life changed in ways that you could never plan for. I still remember the day like it was yesterday, but it seems like a lifetime ago. For those who don't know, it was on September 12th of 2024 that my wife was hit by a 77-year-old woman driving a school van who made a left-hand turn in front of her and basically ran over her motorcycle. My wife loved riding her little 500cc Harley, and was never happier than when she was riding around. And it was one of these things that, you know, my kids had a very hard time dealing with, especially my son. And I told him, I said, look, you know, no matter what happens, and I remember the conversation because it was a year ago, no matter what happens, she was doing something that was, she was smiling up until the moment it happened. She was grinning ear to ear and as happy as she could be because she loved doing that. And I said, I guarantee you, when she gets through this, she's going to want to do it again. Nothing's going to keep her off of it. Now, a year ago, tomorrow, the doctor did not give us hope, gave us very little hope. And as the 10 days that she was in a coma ticked by, they gave us less and less hope. In fact, the one doctor, you know, was quite frank. I asked him, is this a situation where I'm starting to make plans? And he's like, yeah, unfortunately. And even if she does wake up, she's never going to be the person that she was. She's never going to go down the list of things. And at every step of the way, she's defied the odds. And this last year, while trying, difficult, emotional, rage-filled, we're in a place where I'm feeling better. And in a year, we're feeling better. We're walking when they said she would never walk. We're talking when they said she would never talk. We're doing things that no one thought possible. Is she who she was? No, but we're hoping. Is she capable of doing things that she would want to do? No, but we're hopeful. And we're working every day to give her the opportunity. I haven't worked in a year at my day job, because my job now is to care for her. And over this year, which has been very difficult for our family, we have pulled together in ways that I am so proud of. And I'm so proud of our community, of our viewers and our listeners and everyone through this process who has just been so gracious. And on this day, when we've spent the first, you know, 45 minutes talking about tragedy and division and hatred, on this day, I think back to a year ago. She wouldn't be where she is now. She wouldn't be alive if it weren't for that one person. That one person who got out of her car, had some medical knowledge, and cleared her airways so she could breathe. If it weren't for the ambulance, the EMS people who showed up incredibly fast to give her aid, for the helicopter pilot who got the helicopter within feet of where she lay, for the expertise of the people on the helicopter who cared for her to get her to the hospital, for the professionalism and the expertise and the passion of the surgeons and the nurses and the doctors and everyone who has cared for her over this last year.
I said this, you know, 7-8 months ago. That's the world I want to live in. Nobody questioned who she voted for in the last election. Nobody asked her what her political views were. They all came together. And I guarantee you, some of the people who stopped to help, some of the people who were involved in this voted for Donald Trump. But in that moment, there was this thing that brought them together, and it was my wife and her need for their assistance. And they rose to the occasion. And for that, I am eternally grateful to everyone who stepped forward and helped, for everyone who attempted to comfort us in what was the worst moment of our lives. And while I am extremely emotional in this moment, I know this is the country we can be. And I want to thank all of those people. There are far too many for me to thank individually. The thousands of people who sent cards and letters and messages and emails and thoughts and prayers. And look, I'm not a big thoughts and prayers person, but for some, it's the best that they can do. And in that moment, that was us searching for our better angels. And in this moment, my wife is on the path to recovery. We're not there by any stretch of the imagination. It's a long journey. And she's got a lot of challenges. And for the rest of her life, going to have an awful lot of challenges. But they told us she wasn't going to wake up. And she did. They told us she'd never move. And she did. She wiggled her toes. They told us she'd never talk. I can't shut her up. And I love it. Now you go, well, they were wrong. No, I understand. I would have much preferred them to tell me that things weren't great and have her defy the odds than to tell me she was going to be okay. As another friend of mine whose wife was killed over this past year thought she was going to be okay. She wasn't. I understand. But you know, through this whole process, there have only been a handful of people who have been truly horrible. Only a handful. The people who, well, you know, the donor cycles and she shouldn't have been riding a motorcycle. Those are the people you ignore. And the lesson for me in all of this, and look, this accident, this experience of the last year, which I got to be honest, I feel like I've aged 10 years in this last year. But this experience has made me go, we can be a better country. We can come together and solve problems, fix things, do great things. Because on that country road, a year ago tomorrow, that's what this community did. And this is one of the reddest areas in the country. But people came together to care for one of theirs, one of their community. Now, for me, the idea is how do we ensure that everyone is part of this community? So, as I said, I want to thank everyone from the bottom of my heart. I want to thank everyone for the kind words, the thoughts, the prayers, the good juju, all of that. Thank you. And again, for all of those people who showed up to work to do their shift, who showed great compassion, caring, and professionalism, thank you. Thank you. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. The FBI has just announced that they still do not have the person of interest in custody in yesterday's shooting death of conservative activist Charlie Kirk on the Utah Valley University campus. They have just shown a video of the person of interest making a getaway. Bo Mason, Utah's public safety commissioner, says they've collected possible evidence.
He left some palm impressions. There's some smudges, some places we're looking to collect DNA. There's a shoe imprint where we believe the suspect is clearly identified as wearing Converse tennis shoes.
The FBI has released more pictures of the person of interest and have appealed for the public's help in finding the Utah Valley University shooter. Young conservatives on